I'm back. Okay. Welcome. How y'all sleep?
What is that?
Fair enough. That's the answer I was expecting. Sleep is overrated at the Summer Youth Conference. Sleep is for the weak. It's true. Okay. So my daughter's here now, so if she causes a distraction, don't be distracted. Look at me. So I'm up here. Okay, so yesterday we focused on attitudes and characteristics of service and sort of how we should be, what the mindset should be we should have going into that. And we looked in Colossians 3, because you all remembered that, obviously, hopefully. And that was a lot more theory, you can call it, behind everything there. So today, we're going to be looking at the more practical side of Christian serving. I always prefer practical sermons because I'm a very black and white type of individual. The older I get, the less black and white the world seems. But certainly when I was 17 or 18, everything was, there was a right and a wrong answer to every situation that could possibly arise. And that's probably still true. It's not as easy to sort out those answers. So I've always liked practical, do this type of sermon. So this is the one I'm more excited about. I'm not good when people are vague with me. I need to be, you know, subtle hints. If Alana was very subtle about wanting, was interested in me, we wouldn't be married because I would have just been like, no, that's just my imagination and moved on. Fortunately, she was not, and she was very direct, which I need, I very much need. So I'm going to be direct with you guys today, and we're going to look into a few things. And this is going to sound a little funny, considering I like things black and white. We're actually going to start with a parable, which is not typically the most black and white all the time in the Bible. We're going to look at the parable in Matthew chapter 25. So you can turn over there. We're going to have a bunch of turning again today. Like I said, the most important thing that's going to come out of my mouth is from this book this morning anyways. So this is going to get us on the right track today and look at a few different things there. This parable has, I guess, two, I would call them companion parables. They're not the same parable. Jesus told three parables. They're all a little bit different. They all highlight different aspects, but we're going to look at the one here in Matthew. There's one in Luke 19. That's the servants and the minas where they all get things. There's a little bit different in that one. There's also the parable of the shrewd manager, which is a very interesting one. Definitely go take some time and read that one. I, for whatever reason, don't have the reference down. It's in Luke 17, I think. Go look that one up. That one's got some interesting twists. But they all sort of have the same main ideas in that. And we're going to look into the one here in Matthew 25 because I think it's the most clear. I like clarity. So we're going to read verses 14 through 30 just to get us on the right track today. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag. Each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went out at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of the servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more and they will have abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So this is a very interesting parable. I think at a high level glance, most of us sort of have an idea of what's going on here. And there's a lot we could focus on in this for sure. And you could probably talk about this and have a whole series of messages just on this parable. In this parable we see, so we have this master, he gives out these different amounts of gold. The reason I have trouble reading this one is because I've learned it in a different, not learned it, but like I've read it so many times in different translations and they all use different little words. Like this is the parable, how I was raised, the parable of the talents in the versions that I grew up using. They gave five talents, which is just a bag of gold. So the NIV I'm using tonight, this morning, sorry, is using gold. So that's where I'm tripping up all the time. And like, anyways, that's everything. So anyway, the master goes on a trip. He gives his servants money and says, use this, do what you will with it, make me some more. After a long time, he returns and he gets reports from each of his servants. Two of them both have a good return. The one who had five doubles his money. The master says, that's great, good job. The second one does the same thing. The same praise is given to him for that. In this passage, there's two main phrases that really jumped out at me that we're going to look at. The first one is in verse 15, the second half there, where it says, each according to his ability. I'm getting a call from my nephew. I'm going to hang up because I don't have an opportunity. I'm going to set my phone to do not disturb. Sorry, Weston. What was I going to say? Where was I? Threw me right off. Each according to his ability, right? So the first thing I like to focus on, you know, here is that these two servants who had different amounts of gold, the master knew what they could each do, and they both got the same praise. They both had a different return when they came back, right? But they both got the exact same praise. So it wasn't like the one who had five brought five back. He didn't get more praise. He didn't get extra attaboys or pats on the back. They both got the same praise. They were both given different amounts, even though they got the same praise at the end, right? So what they did is they both used what God gave them to the best of their ability. Now, I'm going to tell you a funny little story that's more of an inside joke between me and Alana. So there's one time, Timmins, we were walking at Hershey Lake. This is before Laney, so we could just go on walks easily. And while we were walking, there was this part of the path where there were these rocks that were painted by kindergartens from one of the local schools. And each of these rocks had inspirational quotes on them. Now, most of the quotes were just like garbage quotes that I just don't believe. Like, believe in yourself, you can do it. It's like, no, you can't do it. Talked about that yesterday. So anyways, lots of them were just like that very inspirational, cheesy stuff. But there was one of them that, well, we read it, we thought it was very funny, but it was oddly profound, and it really sort of encapsulates the point I'm trying to make here. And the rock said, do the best you can do, because that's the best you can do. Now, at a first, it's very funny, and me and Alana, like, quote that at each other all the time, because it's funny, but also, there have been times where we've been, like, having serious conversations, and we use that quote, and it's, anyways, there is really a best that we can do. And I think that is what God is expecting from us. He's given us all different levels of talent and skills and spiritual gifts, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But he knows what our maximum is, if you will. And he's expecting the best that we can do, right? Let's say you have two Christians. You have one who runs like a worldwide missions organization. We all look at that person and say, wow, that's a really big job. And then you have a Christian who is moving chairs at their church, right? It's not one job is better than the other, not in the Christian economy, if you will, or that one has more impact. Maybe to our eyes there is, but God knows what the maximum that these people can do. And he's the one who causes the impact on top of all that. So that's one of the phrases we want to keep in mind, is that God knows what we can handle and he gives us what we need, to each to his ability. The other phrase, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit because it doesn't say it specifically this way in the NIV, but it's this idea of being faithful in little and faithful in much. And for that, we're actually going to turn over to Genesis chapter, we're going to look at the life of Joseph. And we're not actually going to read a ton in that because there's a lot of chapters of his life. We're going to read some verses in chapter 39. But the story of his life is between chapter 37 and 50. Joseph, for those of you who might not know, I know most of us probably do, but if you don't, that's okay. He was the youngest of 12 brothers. He was the favorite son of his father. That causes some tension, so much so that he gets sold into slavery by his brothers. Not a great situation for him at all. But while he was in slavery, we're going to read 39 verses 2 to 4. We read this about him. It says, "The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered and lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar," that's the master, "put him in charge of the household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned." So we see that Joseph is a slave in Egypt here, but he served faithfully. He did well. He got to a point where he ended up becoming the second in command in his master's house, in a sense. He was the manager of the house. That's pretty good for a slave. Here. We then see in his story, things sort of take a turn for the worse. He gets in a situation that's not his fault, and he makes a stand for God, which is great. We're not talking about that today. But he ends up going to prison because of this stand and the misunderstanding of the whole situation. And while he's in prison, we read this about him in verses chapter 39, verses 20 through 23. It says, "But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did." So again, we see Joseph in this next situation where he's in prison, and he's serving faithfully in prison. I suspect the prison was maybe not quite set up the same way as the prisons that we're used to today, but we see that he served faithfully where he was, so much so that he ended up becoming the manager or of these prisoners. And the warden of the prison just kind of let him run it, which is right. So we see him being faithful in this little thing and he gets raised up. These are not what we would call glamorous jobs. One, he's a slave, not a servant. There was no benefit really for him here. He was a slave. And the second one, he is in prison. Those are really not great places to be, but he served God faithfully in both of these and was eventually raised up. Now, I think a lot of us know what's coming next. If you turn over to chapter 41, verses 39 through 40, we'll read here. It says, "Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all the people are to submit to you, to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Joseph ends up being called in front of Pharaoh. He interprets the dream, and Pharaoh raises him up to this place of second in command in all of Egypt. At the time, Egypt was one of the main world powers. There's a good chance that he was probably second in command on the planet at the time. Hard to say for sure, but that's sort of what I think on that. So now, we know God had this whole plan, we can see that throughout, to save a large amount of people through Joseph's position in Egypt. We know that that was the overall plan of this. But he didn't start as being second in command of Egypt, right? God didn't just immediately put him there to do what he had to do. He had to go through some pretty rough circumstances, and he had to be faithful to God in those situations, both as a slave and as a prisoner, before he became the second in command. So if we think back to this example, we have the Worldwide Mission Organization and the Christian chair mover or chairman, if you will. The guy who organizes this worldwide mission, he didn't start there. God didn't just like put him there one day. There is a good chance that he had to serve faithfully where he was for a long time before he got there. And that's just how God operates, right? This guy, he had to start at the bottom and now he's here. Anybody? No? The leaders at your home church, the pastors, the elders, you know, anybody who's in any position of authority there, there's a very good chance they didn't just start there, right? They had to work through whatever it was. They had to be faithful in God where he put them before they were given this opportunity to lead in this way. We're going to read in 1 Peter chapter 5. We're going to flip over there real quick. First Peter 5, verses 5 and 7. "In the same way, you who are younger," that's you guys, "submit yourselves to your elders. All of you, clothe yourself with humility toward one another, because God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. Humble yourself, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time." Right? So you don't, sorry, to get, all you have to do when you're serving is you have to just start serving God with humility, no matter where you are, in whatever position he puts you in. That might be cleaning toilets at your church. That might be some other situation before you're going to end up in a position, of being in more, like this faithful of in much, if you will, faithful in much. Whew, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. So you just have to get involved in the things that we, as mere mortals, would consider, you know, crappy jobs, cleaning the bathroom. That's the one I'm going to keep going back to because no one likes doing that, right? You have to be faithful in the small stuff before he's going to make you faithful in the big stuff. Do it through the hardship. Do it through the uncomfortable situations. Just be faithful to God. So that parable is going to set the rest of the path for today. And while we're going through and talking about basically these really practical sermon things, just keep in mind these two ideas, just each according to his ability and being faithful in little before faithful in much. Because I might say something or about a certain way to serve, and you're going to think, I could never do that. You might be sitting there now thinking, like I did, I would never speak at the Sudbury Youth Conference. That would be ridiculous. But just remember that God knows our limits now, and he knows what they're going to be in the future. And he gives to each according to his ability, now and then. He also wants to use people who are willing. He needs people who are willing to be faithful in the little things before he's going to make you faithful in much. So we're going to jump into the real meat and potatoes of today. We're going to talk about spiritual gifts. That's sort of where we're going to spend most of our time here on. And from that, we're going to kind of springboard off as we go through and talk about other things as well. But first, what are spiritual gifts? I know, like I said yesterday, a lot of these things are, we hear about a lot. These terms are thrown around all the time. So these gifts, these spiritual gifts, these are supernatural ability. Now, not supernatural in the way of like superheroes that we see on TV, but these are gifts that we received from God on the day we became a Christian. On the day we gave our lives to him, he gave us a spiritual gift to use. Now, these gifts are different than our natural talents. For example, some people, Noah and Ethan, are good at playing music. So that is not a spiritual gift. It can be used in a spiritual way, but that is just a natural talent. And sometimes you have to work at that to improve that and to really build that. But that is different than a spiritual gift. So we don't want to mix the two. In a sense, they're both from God for sure. But one is a supernatural one, which is a fun way of saying it. In the Bible, there are four main passages that talk about spiritual gifts. We're not going to go to all of these passages. If you're writing things down, you can do that if you just want to remember it. There are two 12s and two 4s. You got Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, Ephesians 4, and 1 Peter 4. Those are the four places in the Bible that like list these gifts, all of them. There are about 21 of them, give or take, depending on how you count. I count it as 21. And today we're not going to be taking time to go through all of them. You don't worry, I don't have a 21-point message. Each one of these gifts could be a message in themselves, learning what it is, and all of that. So I'm going to list them all. Don't worry about writing these down. You can go find them later. There's prophecy, serving, teaching, encouragement, giving, leading, mercy, wisdom, knowledge, faith, healing, pastoring or shepherding, depending on the translation, miracles, distinguishing of spirits, speaking in tongues, interpretation of tongues, evangelism, guidance or administration, depending on the translation again, apostleship, prophecy, serving and helping. Now, some of those gifts are not handed out as regularly or not handed out at all anymore. That's a different topic for a different time. But what is the goal of all of these gifts? Well, we see from these passages I just mentioned, the 2:12s and the 2:4s, there's 1 Corinthians 7. It explains that these gifts are for the common good, this specifically in the context of a local church. In Ephesians 4:11-12, it says that these gifts are to equip us for service and to build up the church. In 1 Peter 4, it's very clear. It says these are to serve others. They are not for us. These gifts do not make us look good. They are not to make us money. They are not to, you know, pursue our careers well. They might help us in those, but that is not their goal. They are for serving those people that God has put around us. Now that we know what the main purpose is, what are the next steps to figuring out what your spiritual gift is, all this stuff? Well, I think, and we're not going to do this today, so this is some homework. For those of you taking notes, if you're not taking notes, you can come back and look at this on YouTube or the recording or whatever. This is the homework that you have to do. Okay, I want everyone to nod their head that they're going to go do this when they get home because it's very important. You're going to list all of the gifts yourself. I just ripped them all off there when I was reading them out. But you're going to go to the Bible. You're going to find them. You're going to make sure that I'm not lying or that I didn't miss one. And you're going to make a list of yourself. And then for that list, you're going to make a description of what each of these gifts are. Now, some of them are pretty straightforward. They make sense. You kind of see it like leading. It's like, oh, I kind of know what a leader is. So that one sort of makes sense. But some of them are not. So what you're going to do is you're going to write a description on what they are, and you're going to back up that description with a reference or two from the Bible. I know, shocker. So that's your homework. I expect you to all go home and do that. Actually, though, especially if you want the rest to really help, that's you got to start by knowing what the gifts are. So we're going to pretend that we've done that step as we move forward and that we all know perfectly what all these gifts are. When I use any examples, I'll use some that are pretty straightforward that we kind of know what they are for that. So after you've listed them all and you know what they all are, and you've studied them all, you're going to find out what yours is. Now, how are you going to do that? This is a question I hear all the time. People are like, what is my spiritual gift? How do I know what it is? There's like tests online you can go take. I don't necessarily recommend that. I have three tried and true methods on how to find out what your spiritual gift is. There might be more ways to do it. There might be maybe you think mine are not good, but these are the three that I think are really good for that. One, you can ask a mentor, someone in your life who you've worked with, who maybe you've served alongside with, who's a little bit older, a little bit further on in their Christian walk, and you're going to ask them. There's a good chance that they might already know what it is because they're watching you and they might say, that guy's pretty good at teaching, probably a teacher. If they don't necessarily know right away, ask them to watch. Just say, hey, can you watch me for the next 6 months and try to maybe help me figure out what it is? That is step one. Ask a mentor. Step two is you go through that list of gifts that you've just studied and put all this work into, and you are going to say, what sort of comes naturally to me now that I'm a Christian? Some of us I was saved at 7, so I don't really know what came naturally to me before or after. Until I get that, that might make it a little bit more challenging. But like, what are ways that I find I really enjoy serving? I'm already doing this and I really like it. Like, it's a very good chance that your gift will line up with that. And the third way might be a little bit more uncomfortable. It's called trial and error. You're not sure if you're good at something? Go out and do it. Do you have the gift of teaching? I don't know. Start a Bible study. Have some friends over and try teaching them stuff. You'll find out pretty quick if that comes naturally to you or not, or you have to put in a lot of effort. And both are still good. Putting in the effort is still really good. We'll get to that a little bit later. Are you good at evangelizing? Well, have you ever done it? Right? Some people, it just comes naturally. You go out to the grocery store and you talk to every person about Jesus on their way by, and it's just super easy for them. Some people it's not. Still should do it, but... So that's another way. Trial and error. Just go and you do it. Just start trying it, and eventually you're going to find out what it is. And there's not that. There's only a maximum of 21 that you can try. Some of them I advise maybe not trying right off the bat. But anyways, I digress. So after you find out what it is, now you know what your gift is. Like, well, now what do you do? In 1 Timothy 4:14, we're not going to read it. It's just I suggest you go turn there because... I want you to make sure what I'm saying is correct. But this is an exhortation from Paul to Timothy about using his gift. I suspect Timothy had the gift of teaching, just from the context clues of that verse there. But he tells him to use it. And that's where we're going to go next, right? So how do we use our gifts to build up the church? We know that that is one of the main goals of these. So how do we actually do that? I go back to trial and error, right? You just, like, there's a lot of options by default. Just by being part of a local church, typically there are a lot of ministries that those churches already run. You've got the kids program at your church, you got the music program, you got other things that I'm sure your churches do, and you just have to use it. So these default, these formal options are the traditional ways, totally good ways to get involved with those and just trial and error and see what comes naturally to you, see which ones you like, and see which ones you can be the most effective in. Absolutely. I think we need to be creative as well in this, right? There's not one set of way to serve or to use our gifts. God has an imagination greater than ours, but we can maybe serve in ways that are not as traditional. How many people enjoy eating snacks? Yeah, well, most of you. That's great. I do too. How many people have ever been to SBF just on a regular Sunday in the last year, give or take? And if you're from Sudbury, you don't get to put your hand up. That doesn't count. Well, I have. So I'm going to tell you what happens. They have the best snacks that I have experienced at a church, maybe ever. I've been to a few churches. I haven't been all over the world, so it's possible there's somewhere better, but I haven't been there yet. They had these, one time I was here, and they had like little things, I guess it was mozzarella, basil leaf, and a tomato drizzled in balsamic vinegar. That was just on a regular Sunday, guys. It was great. Yogurt parfaits, like sandwiches with the crust cut out, you know, those fancy ones. Anyways, this is not a non-traditional ministry. I'll call it the snack ministry. This is something that a lot of churches just don't do, and I'm not... That's a challenge to our churches that maybe we should step up our game on snacks. Christians like their food. But this ministry that is they were being creative, it doesn't just happen, right? There are people who need to work in this to organize it, to lead the people each week, right? There's two gifts right there, right? You need people who are willing to help and clean up. There's another gift you could use. You need people who are willing to give supplies or give financially or give their time. It's another gift. You need people who will stand there and serve coffee to be an encouragement as you get your coffee on a Sunday morning, right? These are all options to use your gift in this service. And if you're part of that and you're here, like, that's great. I love that. Keep doing that. I mean, the snacks. but I think there's more than just Sunday mornings, right? Sunday is not the only day we can serve or use our gift. This is not, no shots at the snack ministry at all. It's the perfect time to do it. And I think we as Christians, myself included, we really get into this mindset that the only time I'm allowed to serve or allowed to use my gift is at church. And since I'm not the guy up on stage, I can't use my gift because that's the only way I can serve is the ones I see visually. I think that's damaging, that thought. I know I've had it. I think it really puts a limit on how God can use you. You need to get out of that. There is a whole six other days of the week that we can use to do or to serve God in other ways. Once again, we might have to be creative, you know, whether that's maybe you have the gift of teaching. I mentioned this before. You have a Tuesday night Bible study. Every Tuesday night, you get together with your friends and you have a Bible study and then you play some Trump the board game or something like that as an example. Or maybe don't. You'll ruin your friendships. You have the gift of encouragement. Like, it's so easy these days to encourage people. Like, you can text people. Like, that's, like, from your, you don't even have to get out of your bed. You could start the texting ministry, right? That sounds great. We're all Gen Z here. We can, I don't think we're not all Gen Z here. Anyways, you could start that. You could do that. You could text people in your church and say, hey, how's it going? Here's a Bible verse. Like, that's a great way to encourage people and to use your gift. If you have the gift of helps or service, like, you could shovel people's driveway. You could start the shovel ministry. And I get the irony of making everything like in a formal ministry. That's not the goal. It sort of helps prove my point that that's our mindset. Maybe you have the gift of administration. How exciting is that? You could plan uplifting and fun events for your church. You could help administer those. Do a trivia night at your church or something. Doesn't always necessarily, right? To get together as Christians is great. It can be like fun stuff like that. Like, we can have fun once in a while. Like, we like having fun. You know, God made us to have some fun once in a while. As long as the entertainment's not the main point. Talked about that yesterday. So I think also all the spiritual gift use, that's great. We should definitely look into that. But I think we can use our natural talents as well in conjunction with our spiritual gifts. I think a lot of times it's like, oh, you have a, I know I've thought this before. It's like, oh, I have, like, I don't have any talents, so I can't do anything. But like talents, they're so vague sometimes. I'm pretty good at tech stuff, for example. And I think, I'm going to use myself as an example. I think I have the gift of administration. I'm a bit of a nerd. But think, like, those work really well together. You could run a live stream for your church, right? You're good at organizing and administrating stuff, and I'm good at tech stuff, right? Like, I could do that, right? There are ways to be creative, to use both our natural talents and our spiritual gifts together to get the best use of things there. Maybe this is like the example that everyone knows. Maybe you're a musician and you have the gift of encouragement. You can come up here and play music. Like that's very encouraging. You can be part of the music program at your church. Maybe you have the gift of evangelism. That's the scary one that, like, everyone who doesn't have it is like, oh, I don't want that one because I have to go out and talk to people. But maybe you have the gift of evangelism and you have skills in marketing. Like, think about the overlay there. I'm not either of those, so I can't think about them. But if you do, think about that, right? And these are all ways that we can build up our local churches. And now that's just my short list of a few silly examples. I'm sure if we were all just, like, brainstorm, we could really come up with a big list of just crazy examples that would both be fun and uplifting and encouraging for everybody. So maybe that's some more homework. Add that to your list. Go home, go to your billets tonight and brainstorm with these people how you can use your natural talents alongside with your spiritual gifts. So, okay. Here's my last point on spiritual gifts. And maybe this one goes without saying, and I've sort of kind of touched on it a little bit, but just because we don't have a certain gift, it doesn't mean we can't serve in an area where that gift would typically be used, right? God can still use us to teach or to preach, even if that's not your spiritual gift. Like, you can get out and do that. It might not be as smooth as the person you hear regularly at your churches, right? They've got more practice than you, they're further along, sure. But if you're a man, you can go out and you can try that. Maybe you're good at it. So we can serve. That's something we need to remember, right? To really help prove this point, maybe you don't have the gift of evangelism. That doesn't get you off the hook, right? I'm not an evangelist. I don't have that gift. I can just sit here in my church and not talk to anybody. No, you have to get out there and tell people about Christ and his message. Like, that is like one of the commands. Like, you got to do that, even though you don't have the gift. So it might not come naturally. That doesn't mean you don't. Just because you don't have the gift of helps or service, depending on your translation, it doesn't mean you can't serve, right? Like, that would just wipe out everything I've talked about for that. I think we can miss the mark as Christians in this area quite a bit, where we can also see someone who's really good at a certain thing. Like, oh, that person is just so good at fill in the blank. They don't need my help. They can handle that on their own. No, there's a really good chance they need help, right? Just because they're good at it, it means people are going to throw more work at them. That's kind of how life works. They're going to need help. They might not need help doing that. You might have to help auxiliary or something on the side. You can do that. Or maybe you'll see someone who's so good at serving that you'll say, they're so good at doing whatever they're doing, I'm not even going to try. Also, very bad attitude. I think all Christians should be serving in many ways. Inside, you know, within the realm of what their spiritual gift is or their natural talents, but also outside of that, right? Like, there are certain things that you don't even really need talent to do to be able to serve. Like, you can sweep. Some of you, I've seen people at Northland, they can't sweep. But it's really easy to learn. I will teach you. We can do that after. But you can serve in so many ways, both within the realm of your gift and outside for that. So that's sort of all I'm going to talk about, spiritual gifts today. We're going to move on to my second last point here. And it's a bit of a big one when it comes to service, because I know it's something that I think everyone your age and myself included have you know, wrestled with at some point, is this idea that, can I serve if I am sinning or struggling in a certain area? Whatever that area happens to be, everyone has different struggles, right? But I struggle with it a lot. First, I want to make a very clear distinction. There's a difference between struggling with a sin that you're trying to have victory over and willful disobedience. If you are just ignoring God's commands altogether, and you're just out doing your own thing, that certainly will get in the way of serving. And frankly, you're probably not even going to want to serve. Like, you're going to be like avoiding any extra work if that's your attitude and you're ignoring God and just like purposefully or knowingly walking away. You're not going to want to. But if you're struggling with a sin and maybe you've failed so many times in a certain area and you just feel like you can't have victory over whatever that struggle is, and I think we can all see that. This is a very different heart posture, we'll call it. Like, this is, like, there is, like, yeah, that's not good. We need to deal with that. But you're still willing and you want to serve, right? Don't wait until you're perfect to start serving. And like I said, maybe this goes without saying, but I just feel like we should reinforce that. Like, if you're going to wait until you're perfect to start serving, well, you'll be in heaven and the opportunities to serve are different than they are here. And you're going to miss out on so much. I want to take a look at the biblical example of this, I think. A couple, actually. But we're going to zoom in on Samson. His life takes place in the book of Judges between chapter 13 and 16. We know that he was sent from... I'll read it. Verse 1. 13 verse 1 says, "Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. No, I wrote the wrong verse down. Anyways, that's not the right verse. It's not even there. Basically, God sends Samson into the picture to help deliver them from the Philistines. Now, if you know anything about the life of Samson, he, throughout most of his life, all of it even, he had no regard for what his goal was supposed to be, that he was set apart for. He chased after women. We see that a lot. He struggled with that. He had pride issues, anger issues. And a lot of the times, I would say, he just had no regard for God, that willful disobedience. But in the end, in Judges 16, at the end of his life, we see that he is used in a mighty way. But it is not until he is both humbled and willing to be used by God. And there were certainly consequences for his actions. I'm not saying there's always consequences to sin. You don't know what they're going to be, and you don't get to choose what they are. And I'm actually going to just read the last little bit here of Samson's life in chapter Judges 16, verses 26 to 31. It says, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so that I may lean against them." Now the temple was crowded with men and women, and all the rulers of the Philistines were there. And on the roof there were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just once more. And let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." Then Samson reached towards the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. So we see that God still used Samson in a way to help deliver the Israelites from the Philistines. It may not have been the way that it could have gone down if Samson was serving faithfully and humbly and not letting his sin, you know, hinder him or distract him. But he still was used by God. But he had to be humbled and had to be willing before he was able to. Now, maybe Samson, that's a bit of a wild story. I get that for those of you who are more familiar with it. And maybe you can't relate to that. And that's fair. I can understand that. Let's think about Elijah for a minute. In James chapter 5, verse 17, it says that Elijah was a human just like us, right? And we see that in his story, that he struggled with things the same way that we struggle with things as well. And he was still used by God. If we were to list all of the people in the Bible who struggled with something and were still used by God, it'd be a very big list of people, probably all of them. There are some prime examples. David, who's called a man after God's own heart. He was a murderer and an adulterer. Like those in the minds of the Christian population, those are the bad ones. Like you don't do those, but that's what he did. He was still used by God. Moses was a murderer. He led the people of Israel. And Paul hunted down and murdered Christians and was still used in a mighty way for God. So once again, these people had issues. We have issues. I get that. God isn't looking for perfect people. He's looking for willing people. We shouldn't let our struggles get in the way of service. Now, sin can and will hinder our service. It'll get in the way, and it needs to be dealt with. It is very serious. We can't just sweep it under the rug and continue serving. We do need to be dealing with it. We need to ask for forgiveness regularly. We need to ask God for strength to have victory over it. And we need to seek people to help hold us accountable and to serve alongside us, to keep us going for him. We can find victory in these areas, 100%. I have in areas in my life, in my past. But we can't let past failures stall our future service or our future growth. We need to keep serving and growing for God in spite of our struggles. So that's my point about sin and struggles, because I know that that one is always in our minds. So my last point about service here is sort of the opposite of service. I want to talk really briefly, you'll see why I want to talk about it briefly at the end, about rest. Right? Service is hard for God, and that happens. Rest is really important. We see that in the Bible. God literally built rest into Israel's calendar, right? Weekly and yearly. We see that God rested on the seventh day. Jesus rested in a boat. Like, we know that rest is okay, and I think we need to take rest. Now, there are a couple caveats to this. The rest doesn't mean sitting in front of the TV, right? We need rest from maybe some from service, but we also need rest from things like TV, things from secular hobbies that are not bad. You know, we need rest from our phones, the internet. These things all can get in the way and distract us and cause us the opposite of rest, right? They exhaust us, especially in this realm of Christian service. I think we have a really good example in Luke chapter 10, which we're going to go read. This is the story of Mary and Martha. It's very, very well known. And I'm going to read it, and then it'll be more well-known. It's verses 38 through 42. It says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord said, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. So, serving is good. Spending time with Jesus is better. True rest is being with Jesus, right? Is spending that time. The rest we see in the Bible is not in front of a TV. It is not being entertained, right? Life is not about being entertained. We talked about that yesterday. Life is about serving Christ. It is possible to find yourself in a situation where you are overworked from service. You keep saying yes to every person that comes up to you and asks you to do something. That's a good attitude to have, but you certainly can get so busy serving that you forget to spend your time with Christ and your walk suffers because of it. Now, I know that that's maybe not the biggest problem that we all suffer with. I have a quote, and I'm glad he's here. It's more of a paraphrase quote, because at one point from up here, this pulpit, Jimmy Martin said something, and it sort of stuck with me. And like I said, I'm paraphrasing. I didn't go find the message, Jimmy. And it went something like this. It said, I don't think the main problem with the church in North America is with spiritual burnout. He said, let's focus on actually working and serving before we worry about resting. And I'm going to leave it there because I think that really sums everything up really nicely. We need to actually start serving before we start worrying about taking this time to rest and ease off the gas. I know that I have this problem. Other people have this problem, and I'm sure lots of people here have this problem, where we just don't want to do things. We just want to sit in front of the TV. So let's start serving, and then we worry about the rest after the fact. So just in closing, just a few other little things. We're going to turn over to Luke chapter 17, and I think this is going to just help set some expectations as I let you loose on your home churches about service. Some expectations. Luke 17, verses 7 through 10. Suppose one of you has a servant plowing or looking after the sheep. Will he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, come along now and sit to eat? Won't he rather say, prepare my supper, get yourself ready and wait on me while I eat and drink? After that, you may eat and drink. Will he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, we are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty. When I first read this, my brain's reaction was, wow, that's pretty harsh, Jesus. You're not going to let these people eat with you. But that's not the point of this, right? Jesus says that as Christians, we are to be servants. And we should be willing to be treated as a servant, which means sometimes we're not going to get a thanks. Sometimes we're not going to get a pat on the back, right? In spite of that, we should be putting our all into serving Christ and not about looking for that praise from man. We should be looking for that praise from God, that well done, good and faithful servant. That's what we should be working for. Now, it is also good to say thank you to people when they do stuff. So there's the other side of the coin as Christians. We should be thankful and gracious and when people do stuff for us. But when we are serving, we should not be doing it for the thanks. So one last thing before I'm gone and you don't have to hear from me anymore this weekend. And I want to add one more thing to my list of hard truths from yesterday. Now, this is another quote. I like quotes right now. And this one is from Instagram. It was one of the last quotes I saw on Instagram. Now I'm not on Instagram anymore. That's to my benefit, maybe your benefit as well. And it's from a great theologian. Her name is Brenna Martin. She's my sister. Anyway, she posted this and it said, don't let yesterday's faithfulness get you through today. Just think about that for a second. I'm going to read it again. Don't let yesterday's faithfulness get you through today. She doesn't know this, but I have a note on my phone now that has that quote that I see all the time. I think we need to always be pushing to continue to be faithful. There's always work to do. We can always grow closer to God. Christians are like sharks. If we stop swimming, our faith will suffer. Now, I'm going to read, just in closing, my true and utter closing. I hate when preachers say in closing eight times, as I'm on, I think, time number three. James chapter 1, verses 22 to 25. Oh, my Can't find it. James 1, 22 through 25. It says, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do." Let's close in prayer. Lord, we come before you now and we just ask for your help. We know that serving can be hard, it can be thankless, but we know it's for you. And it is of such great value, Lord, even the things that we think are small or that the world thinks is insignificant. Lord, we know that there is such an impact that this can have both here and also for you. Lord, I just pray that we would run this race in a way to win the prize, that we would seek after you, Lord, and that we would serve the people that you have put in our lives. So Lord, we just thank you for what you've done for us, that great act of service of dying on the cross. We just thank you that you care enough about us to want us to be part of your plan. Lord, we just thank you for that. I just pray for the rest of this weekend. I pray that these kids would go home to their home assemblies and be able to just serve mightily for you. So once again, we thank you for all that you've done, and we just pray for this weekend. Praise in your name. Amen.